This is a HeadGum Original.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Across this nation, the words Gotham City are synonymous with crime. Our streets are overrun. Our public officials are helpless.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I'm reading your stuff.
I'm Vicki Vale.
Vicki Vale, yeah, photographer. What brings you here?
I'm here to see some of the wildlife in Gotham City.
Who are you?
Oh, sorry, Bruce Wayne.
And what do you do for a living?
My life is really complex.
Every punk in this town is scared of Batman.
Not for the night time, there is no bat. If there were, we would find him, we would arrest him.
Who is this guy?
You freak. Wait till they get a load of me.
An enema.
A lot of people think you're as dangerous as the Joker.
Fuck it. I think your friend Wayne is really screwed up.
His parents were murdered in that house.
I have given a name to my pain. Batman.
He's out there right now. I've got to go to work.
If you gotta go, go with a smile.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
And this season, we are covering the Batman movies.
Yes, this is the second episode of the sixth season. We're working our way through these movies within the Batman universe with the help of fellow newcomers, superfans, and sometimes people who have contributed to the universe.
And this season is going to be 14 episodes, culminating in a very exciting live stream episode where anything can happen and it's live. We're going to cover as much as we can get to overview, you know, the franchise. We're not going to be able to get to everything.
No, it's too much.
Yeah, there's just too
dense.
It's too dense. But today we are going to be discussing the 1989 Batman starring Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm. Batman is available with a subscription to Max, Hulu, Prime Video. But if you want to give somebody money, Apple TV Plus, Google Play, and Vudu. And we're going to spoil the shit out of this.
But we are so excited for our guest
Ooh,
today.
Baby.
Our guest is an actor, comedian, writer, producer, director, and singer. You've probably seen him on SNL, How I Met Your Mother, New Girl, or maybe even in the Broadway production of Hamilton. It's Taryn Killam.
Hi, my friends.
Hi.
Oh my gosh, such a newcomers fan. So honored to be on this, the most important season of your lives.
It does feel really important.
Yes, yeah. Because people seem to really love Batman.
I think they do. Wait, I need to talk about Hamilton.
Yes, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
Was that the most amazing? I feel like that was the most perfect role for you in the world.
So fucking good.
Yeah, yes, it was. I felt like a contest winner. it was at that point, you know, everybody's favorite thing in the world. Like, this is a true story. On the 6 years I was on SNL, the total request for tickets for that show was fewer in those 6 years than the 3 months I did Hamilton. Does that make sense?
Crazy.
Meaning that people crawling out of the woodwork, like everybody,
everyone's like, "Hey,
trying
to
get Hamilton tickets."
Yeah.
And a lot of people try to get SNL, you know, like one or two. But this was overwhelming to the point of like delete, you know, blocking emails. It was, people loved it, and I loved doing
love
it.
That.
And that passion. That passion for the show certainly informed like my experience in terms of like the pressure, the stress of just like, you know, pull your weight, dude.
Yeah.
And it was truly one of the most rewarding and thrilling professional experiences of my life. Second only maybe to this.
Yeah. Well,
thank
obviously,
you.
We
this
knew that was coming.
This is important. This podcast
this
is
good.
Important.
This is, well, yes, this movie that we're about to talk about for the very first time is truly the movie that made me want to do showbiz.
To me, like, that makes sense. I think like I loved all the characters and how I like Tim Burton's style and everything. Yeah. And I think watching this as a kid, it gives you that feeling of like, wow, like adults get to have a really cool job. Like if you do this for a living, it's so cool.
Yes. What I'm doing in the backyard as a 7-year-old child, these people are doing like full throttle with a huge budget, like making magic seem real.
That is funny because that's literally what we do, what children do. We play pretend and get paid money.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's wild. Yeah.
When you think about acting, sometimes it makes me like sick. Like when I think about like walking up to someone in the scene and being like, why would you do that? And like, we're all, you know, we're all like, like being like really
and
intense.
You're like trying
or something
to get there. And what can I do to get there? And it's like, oh no.
Cringy.
Or like someone puts a fake nose on you and you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. What is this? Especially like after a take or after a performance where like, that was good. You found it. That's where I really self check and go like, I found playing like a I found playing a 78-year-old man in an improv who doesn't know what bananas are.
Hey, that's a good scene.
It's a great
and
scene.
It's, and it kills. It's slaughtered.
See, I feel it
sides
more
were split like a peel.
I feel it more during like a dramatic scene that I feel like I didn't nail.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm like, well, that's really rough.
Oh, really?
I'm like, I really tried to do
I
that.
I try really and hard,
I
and I don't
that.
Know how to be
I don't
serious.
Think I got that.
I was earnest in that take.
Yeah.
I was earnest in that attempt.
That's hard.
Very also, vulnerable right now.
I did a voiceover where I played an elephant, and they were like, can you give us like elephant effort noises? And it was like very early in my career, and I was like, yes. And they're like, go for it. And I was like, I'm sorry, what noises do elephants make? And they're like, you know, like.
Wait, I literally had this happen recently with being a chicken who's about to laugh. It was supposed to be a chicken noise into laughter. Could not do it. I don't know.
Oh, God.
That's an insane request.
And
that's
hard. I tried to practice in the car and I was like, I have to die now. Like, this is like so. It's not cool. Okay, well, tell us really quickly, what is your relationship with Batman? We can talk about acting all day, but
yeah. Batman, like comic books, superhero stuff, dyed in the wool, like from first memories, those were my important stories, important characters. But it was always very bright and colorful in the comic books, and this movie, Batman. 89 Burton Keaton's Batman, like, was the first time that made it feel real, because there'd been Superman movies, right? Like, there'd been the Christopher Reeve Superman, like, and those are impressive and great, but there's something about Superman that's like too fantastic. He's an alien and he can fly and he never gets hurt, and it's such fantasy. This movie was like, not only is Batman a real dude with exceptional skill, but he might actually exist. Like, he's no longer Adam West in pajamas. He is a real man with a bulletproof black rubber suit, and he will appear through fog on Gotham City rooftops and right wrongs. And
I like that.
I like that too.
I love it. I love this movie. I love it. It was fun going back and watching it because like it held up, and there was there was stuff that like I didn't necessarily pick up on the first time, you know, every rewatch it reveals something new for me.
Yeah, I had seen it as a kid, but then this was my first time watching it as an adult, I think. And it was really, I mean, I just thought it was really fun. And I was very engaged the whole time. Nicole, I don't know.
Was not engaged for 82% of the time.
I did find that's okay, because this came out in 89.
Oh, there we go.
That's why.
No, that's why. Only. I don't know. It was just like kind of slow. I didn't like Jack Nicholson too much.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. It was just
so Taryn's having a hard time processing.
I know. I'm really sorry.
I'm okay. I know what I signed up for. I'm like I said, I'm an avid listener. The Fast season, in my opinion, is flawless.
I gaslit myself. I thought I'd seen every single movie, and truly, the second movie, I was like, I've never seen this in my life.
Yeah,
I've seen
nobody
one
needs
and
to
five.
See that one.
I feel like they're all the same thing, but
no, I'm okay. Sorry.
Fair enough.
No,
whoa,
they're distinct
I'm about to get
and important.
Down yes. Right now,
they're distinct important. And important, and they're cinema.
Yes, thank
all right,
you. Taryn.
I respect everything that's happening here.
Eat it, Scorsese. Eat it. You could never, Scorsese. You could never Fast
really
or
couldn't.
Furious.
He really couldn't.
Scorsese.
I like how you're saying that.
Scorsese.
Scorsese wishes.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and we're going to jump deep into
deep,
this
deep,
Batman.
Deep, deep, deep. Remember in 2018 when border control separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not been reunified. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you'd see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that families belong together, join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity to donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. altrolado.org/volunteer. Ooh, do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash. We're back. Okay, so this movie was written by Sam Hamm.
I'm honestly so happy for him.
What a great name. And Warren Sacrin?
It should be Warren Scorin, because it's like Sam Hamm and Warren Scorin.
Yeah, Warren really fucked that up.
Yeah.
Directed by Tim Burton, released June 19th, 1989.
We're going to deep dive into this plot of this film and break it down for you guys. And we really want to thank the Batman Fandom Wiki for the help with this summary. We love you guys.
The movie opens in a crime-ridden Gotham City where we see two muggers attack a couple and their son. Batman, Michael Keaton, watches from above, then finds the muggers and beats them up, instructing them to tell all their friends about him as he jumps off a building and disappears. That was pretty funny to me because I was like, that's how you're spreading the word about yourself.
Yeah, just tell them.
Like, what?
You
criminals
tell
are like,
two friends and you tell hey, two friends.
Don't rob anymore. There's a Batman.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like everyone knows about him. I feel.
They were they were talking about him before he got there. Right? Like they were like, it's the bat. They said the bat got him. And the only clarification that Batman does bring is that he's not the bat, he's Batman.
Not any old bat. Batman.
I'm Which bat might be guy. Slightly less scary now that I think about it, if I'm really criticizing.
If he was a huge
this.
Bat,
like
I would
if
be...
he was just
terrified. So scared.
There's a giant mutant bat that's just like that can sense like corrupt morality is terrifying.
No, that's scary.
Because like that's not going to listen to reason.
No, right. This is a human being who's like maybe I could defeat this man dressed as a bat.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
A genetically modified gigantic bat.
No,
no, thank you.
How did it happen? Okay, meanwhile, we see that a new district attorney, Harvey Dent, played by Billy Dee Williams, has been sworn in a big flashy ceremony. His mission is to clean up the city of crime, in particular to protect them from crime boss Carl Grissom. Jack Napier, played by Jack Nicholson, who's Grissom's hitman, watches the event on TV along with Alicia, Jerry Hall, who it turns out is in fact Grissom's mistress. Napier makes it clear he isn't afraid of either of them. Now, I'm watching this. And it became clear how much I didn't know about this because I was like, I thought he was Joker. And then I literally was like, when does his face get Joker?
Which one?
Jack Nicholson. Yeah. Like we see him regular.
Oh, yeah. Right. I was also confused. I was like, why?
No, because then
They tip it when he's playing with his cards. He holds up the Joker. There's some decent foreshadowing there.
Like I knew he still was Joker, but I was going, when does he put on the makeup? Like, I didn't
understand.
It's
an origin story. Yeah.
didn't know that there was going to be a backstory to him. Also, yes. I was like, why does he watch TV with the TV on the floor? Who does that?
Yeah.
That really, I was like, this is sick.
A Joker.
Yeah.
A real Joker.
He's just a weird guy.
A prankster. Yeah. Well, I mean, Jack Nicholson's connection to this film is fascinating because he got like the biggest payday ever because they gave him back end points. So he made something like $50 million. He was like what Robert Downey Jr. is to Iron Man, he was to this Batman franchise.
Because
I think he still sees some sort of percentage from all future iterations of Joker.
Oh my God.
And
like,
there's
that
a
never happens.
But they pressured Jack. They wanted Jack, and he kept saying no. So they offered it to Robin Williams to get under Jack Nicholson's skin.
Just to fuck with him.
Just to fuck with him. And then Jack came back and was like, all right, I'll do it. And Robin was like heartbroken.
Oh,
Robin was crushed.
That fucking sucks.
Isn't that
brutal? So sad.
That's so shitty.
The only equivalent I have in my life is like when I audition for something and I think I have a chance, and then a celebrity gets it, and I'm like, they never even
wanted me.
Right.
They didn't want me at all.
I was but a pawn.
Yeah.
Mine's sadder. It'll just be another fat black woman who looks pretty much like me, who's at the same level as me, and I go, I guess I wasn't good enough. This is.
Am I?
I guess any way you slice it, we're all getting rejected at some point.
Alexander Knox, Robble Wool.
Robert.
I think it's Robert.
It's gotta be Robert.
Okay,
Batman fandom wiki.
It's Arliss. Did you guys do a season on Arliss already? Did I miss that one?
No, wait.
You
no,
haven't done
no.
Newcomers Arliss
yet? We need to do Newcomers Arliss. Wait, it's Robert, right?
I've never seen
Robert Wool, yes.
Arliss.
It says
Robble, Robber, Robber Wool.
Was and it, I said was Robble, this written by the Hamburglar?
The Robber.
Oh my God, Robert Wool. A journalist who's trying to get answers about the supposed vigilante known as Batman meets photojournalist Vicky Vale, Kim Basinger, who is intrigued by the Batman mystery and is going to help him find out who this guy really is. They attend a benefit at Bruce Wayne's estate. They briefly meet Bruce Wayne, and he's soon pulled away by Alfred, who ushers him into the Batcave. There, Bruce watches a tape of Commissioner Gordon talking to a police officer about a raid on Axis Chemicals.
Okay, Kim Basinger, beautiful, also looks a lot like
Jerry Hall.
Hall.
Yes.
I found that a little
for
confusing.
A hot second, I said, these are different women.
Yeah.
And then I was like, Nicole.
I know.
Two blondes can be in a movie.
Yeah, it was
Barbie.
Confusing.
Barbie, now the highest grossing picture of all time for Warner Brothers.
Yeah. But are there even two blondes in Barbie?
Listen, still haven't seen it.
Okay, you got to get on that.
I know. Everyone has seen it already. There's no one to go with.
Why don't we do Newcomers Barbie? We'll watch all those like straight to DVD, like cartoons for kids.
Barbie, I mean, the Magical Mermaid. I've never seen them. Barbie, yeah. Life in the Dream House.
Yeah. So you're familiar.
Darren's very familiar.
I'll sign up.
You're
going to
be back.
Up. I have two daughters who are well-versed in the Barbie series.
They're all those like computer movies where it looks like a computer game.
Oh, yes.
And to be honest,
no, I just know.
That TV show is called Barbie Life in the Dream House. It's pretty funny.
Okay.
There's some good bits.
Really
There's
funny.
Some good bits.
Okay, then our season will be good. So
after Grissom, Arliss.
Yeah, Arliss.
I don't know what Arliss
is. I just looked it up actually because of this, where I was like, I know that guy. I know he's on Arliss. I don't know what that means. And then I was like, I think he's a sports manager. It turns out he's a sports agent.
He's an agent. Yes.
Okay. I don't know how I knew any of that, but yeah. That was a pretty long running show.
It was on HBO?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I do know something.
Yeah, see? Okay. Grissom orders Jack Napier and his men to go to Axis Chemicals and destroy any evidence connecting their gang to the chemical company. But when he gets there, Napier realizes they've been set up by Grissom, and he finds himself in a shootout with Lieutenant Eckhart, a corrupt cop working for Grissom. Commissioner Gordon then interrupts Eckhart's bust and tells the policeman to take Napier alive. Next, Batman appears and takes out Napier's men one by one. Napier kills Lieutenant Eckhart just before he can escape, but then gets into it with Batman, who blocks a bullet Napier fires at him with his glove. The bullet ricochets and rips through Napier's face, and though Batman tries to rescue him, Napier falls into a vat of chemicals and is dumped into the river.
Which is a real bummer. But Batman, it didn't seem like he was trying that hard to save him.
No.
So when I showed this movie to my children, with the preface of like, this is a very important movie to dad, so be gentle. The quote of the night was from my younger daughter, who was 6 at the time. And she said, you know what I like about Batman? He has no rush. And I thought that was the most astute observation of this Batman in particular, because to your point, he's not moving with speed or whatever, you know, but he is very elusive, but he is a very straight posture.
Yeah.
Very, very, you know, very keeping that cape close to his body. He's got no rush. So I think like, I want to say that it was a totally creative choice, but I do think the limited mobility really informed the way that Batman moves through the shadows.
I agree.
Yeah.
Tough to move in that little rubber suit.
I wonder if that affected the tone, because it's like he's so stoic. Like if he was doing more goofy little moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be a little more distracting.
Yeah.
I mean, not to get too far ahead of it, but like you'll work your way up to the Batman, which is the most recent Batman movie. And like he's as mobile as all get out. He's just basically got elbow pads and knee pads. But my problem with that movie is like one of the opening lines is they think I'm in the shadows, but I am the shadow. And for the rest of the movie, he just knocks on the front door of every building he walks into. And it's like, well, it's not as sneaky and as cool as Keaton's Batman, who appears and reappears.
Yeah.
Because he has no rush.
Can't knock on the door.
Yeah, you can't just knock on the door and say, hey, I'm a bat.
I'm
Batman
here.
Should walk on a knock on a door, unless it's Batman 66.
So the following night, Bruce and Vicky have dinner in his mansion. This is wild. The night starts out a little formal and awkward. Then the two move downstairs to have dinner with Alfred to get to know each other and eventually spend the night together.
So they're having soup across the longest table. And Batman doesn't seem to think this is weird.
No. And
well,
I was like,
it's not Batman,
it's
Bruce Wayne.
I mean, Bruce doesn't think it's weird.
And at that point, I was like, is Bruce maybe... And this is not a knock to people on the spectrum. I'm spectrum-y. Is he on the spectrum?
There was no weirdness to him at all that she was so far away.
Yeah.
It was a date. It's clearly not getting romantic at that level. And they're eating soup, which I just think is kind
not
of a weird
sexy.
Choice.
But that's it feels like an appetizer. It feels like an amuse-bouche of sorts.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's the full meal. But he does say, she's like, do you like this new room? And he goes, yeah. And he's like, I don't think I've ever been in here. And then later she says, you know, this house, it doesn't feel like you. And he says, some of it is very much me. And he's alluding, because who he is Batman. And yeah. Bruce Wayne is the facade.
Yeah. Okay. I liked when they moved and they were sitting in the.
Okay.
I liked what you said.
I was like, yeah. Yeah, that is nice. I mean, you've really thought about this movie.
A gentle surrender is no. Very
honestly, that's most of what this podcast is.
Yeah, just us going. Oh, okay.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy like it makes
that.
You happy.
No, I like that. but I liked when they moved into Alfred's quarters and they had their soup at his little table.
It was cute. And then I was like, yeah, Alfred is more of family than a butler.
And it's helpful to have a third wheel on a first date to kind of like have casual conversation.
Yeah. I always like to invite a friend on my dates.
I like to invite the oldest friend I have. So Napier, in the meantime, is not dead, but horribly disfigured by the chemicals he's fallen into, leaving him with chalk white skin, bright green hair, and a permanent red grin. I loved the grin, personally.
Yes.
It was cool. The transformation has driven him completely insane. Calling himself the Joker, he kills Grissom and takes over his criminal empire. His first scheme is to spread terror in the city by creating hygiene products laced with a deadly chemical known as Smilex that kills its victims by hysterical laughter. Following the death of a news anchor on air, the city becomes paralyzed with fear. I like that scene.
That was pretty funny, but also scary. I was like, imagine being there and like being like, oh, my friend's having a good time telling the news. And they're like, oh, shit, she's dead.
And the way when they're dead, they have the smile.
Yeah.
I like that.
The newscaster lady like laughing in the middle of the broadcast. And you don't really know what's going on. So great.
Yeah, I know.
So great.
And I also thought that was very creepy that they don't know how the thing is getting to everyone. Like, how this Smilex is like transmitted.
I gotta say, it is a very good villain move.
Yeah.
It was very sneaky.
Yeah. And I thought that was a very fun cameo type role to have as an actor, like to be like the person who just like gets killed by the Joker.
You just giggle.
Yeah.
I could have done that.
I could do that.
Next, the Joker then sets up a trap at the Flugelen Museum for Vicky. Mm-hmm.
Nailed it. I shouldn't have said nailed it to you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's part of the zeitgeist. I don't mind it at all.
Okay, keep it.
I'll
keep it. So with whom he's become smitten, while his gang destroys all the art around them, the Joker then tries to disfigure Vicky by spraying her with acid, which is so rude. But Vicky douses him with water, and I don't think that's a thing to fight acid, but I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
Just then, Batman crashes through the museum ceiling, grabs Vicky, and escapes with her. Then he gives her the secret of the Joker's chemical combinations and asks her to take it to the press. The Joker, even more furious with Batman, vows to eliminate the mysterious vigilante for interfering with his plans.
I mean, this scene was scary to me, where she doesn't know what's going on, and then he shows up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the sort of fear of like her face getting ruined, which I just didn't want to
happen. She's so pretty.
Also, his look when she throws the water and the pancake makeup's melting down is like terrifying.
I thought it was pretty genius when he paints over it with like skin tone. Yeah. And I thought it was wiped off, but it was like that was actually the part that wipes off. And it's like the white. It was very clever.
It was clever. Mm-hmm. When he was in the skin tone color, I was like, do we paint him slightly too dark?
Danger.
The prosthetics are also much creepier when he is skin tone.
A flesh tone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like that part.
Yeah.
Later, upon Alfred's insistence, Bruce goes to Vicky's apartment to confess his secret identity as Batman. Now, why is he jumping into this?
Before
he can do that, the Joker interrupts them, barging in and admonishing Vicky for taking off with Batman. When the Joker spots Bruce in the apartment, he taunts him, asking, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? And then shoots him. The Joker takes off, but when Vicky rushes to Bruce's side, she finds he's gone, leaving only the silver platter that he had used to block the Joker's bullet.
Tricky, tricky. How did that happen?
Very tricky. And I feel like I'm just amazed by what he can withstand.
Yes.
Also, I'm amazed by the fact that there is part of his face exposed. And I'm wondering if the head thing is bulletproof.
I think any part that's made out of the suit has got some sort of bullet repellent aspect. Yeah. But for sure, jaw's a weak spot. Mouth, jaw shots.
Jaw's weak.
That's Batman's weakness. Everybody knows that. Kryptonite for Superman. Mouth shots for Batman.
Yeah.
The mayor of Gotham City comes on TV to regretfully report that Gotham City's 200th anniversary celebration has been postponed indefinitely. Just then, the Joker pirates the airwaves, telling viewers that he will personally oversee the celebration and give away $20 million in cash, which is crazy. Who has that in cash?
Yeah, that's wild.
Like, any person would advise you to put something in stocks. Plus, he probably promises a confrontation with the real menace of Gotham City, Batman.
Meanwhile, Knox tells Vicky about Bruce Wayne's parents, who were mugged and murdered right in front of him as a boy. He shows her a photo of Bruce as a child at the scene, and Vicky recognizes Bruce as Batman by the look on his face in the photo.
Wild.
She leaves to confront him at Wayne Manor. No.
Wild. I've never looked at a child and been like, I know the adult that you grew up into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's really...
That's wild.
Especially you just met this guy.
Yes.
It's like if I saw a picture of you, I might be like, yeah, that's probably Nicole. Yeah.
But we know each other. Yeah. We didn't just meet.
Yeah. And if I saw you in a newspaper, I wouldn't assume it is you.
She's not clocking that he's Batman, but she just sees the young child who's suffered trauma, and that's why she followed into that mysterious alley, and now that makes sense. But I don't think that's where she's like, oh, this is the vigilante guy.
No, but she thinks it's Bruce Wayne. She's like, that's him?
Yeah.
Or you're saying, oh, wait.
But she's looking through the microfiche because it's from a news report. It's a very famous,
so
Thomas and Martha Wayne.
When I read that,
I thought, boy,
we're dumb.
No, we're really great.
We're smart. Okay, Bruce watches the Joker's TV appearance while looking through the files of his parents' murder, which is, I don't know, kind of funny. As he replays the events of that night in his mind, he remembers that one of the gunmen repeated the Joker's line, "Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" And he realizes that one of his parents' murderers was a young Jack Napier / Joker. He's so engrossed in thought that he doesn't notice that Alfred has brought Vicky into the Batcave, revealing Batman's identity as Bruce Wayne. They talk about what his job as Batman means for their relationship, but then Bruce tells her that the Joker is still out there, so he's got to clock in. He's got to go to work.
He has to go to work. I feel like if two evil people said to me, "Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" I would connect the dots so fast.
Yes.
I just feel like
I agree.
There's a gun pointed at me twice.
Yeah.
I'm looking for similarities.
Yes.
So the parade that the Joker promised is underway in Gotham City. This was a fun scene.
I liked this.
But it isn't long before mayhem ensues as canisters attached to the balloons start to release poisonous gas in the crowd. So this was, now was Prince the music? Was that what it was?
Yes.
This was so...
Did you not? I mean, he did a whole album. He did the Bat Dance.
Right. Now I know a little bit about this, but I don't really know a lot about this.
He did a full concept album about Batman. Like he wrote like... The music in the museum is Prince. The music at the parade is Prince. And there was a very famous video, the Bat Dance, that kind of samples audio files from the film. And speaking of choreography, very elaborate choreography. And Prince, half of him is himself and half is Joker. He's sort of split down the middle.
I've never seen that.
Oh, it's very worth a watch.
That sounds amazing.
Wow.
Well, this was like the most 80s thing that could happen.
Yes.
Is like the hip hop sort of like float coming through with the Prince music.
I liked it.
It was really fun.
A lot of ghetto blasters, a lot of boom boxes on the shoulders.
Yeah, and the puffy pants. Mm-hmm. And,
In his Batplane, I do love Batplane, Batcar, Batmobile. Like, it's all very fun to me.
It's great branding. Solid branding.
Yeah, just put Bat in front
just
of
bat.
It.
Just Bat.
You got it.
Bat shoes. Batman swoops down and grabs all of the parade balloons. And this was funny because the Joker was like, "My balloons! Not my balloons!" Carrying them out towards the ocean to release them where they won't do any harm.
Except for to the animals.
Yeah, to the dolphins and the whales and the fish.
We
and
didn't
crabs.
Know that then.
No. No, now we do.
Yeah.
Furious, the Joker shoots one of his goons and sends the rest away to scare the crowd while he deals with Batman himself. The Batplane swoops down towards the remaining parade floats, shooting them and destroying them. But the Joker manages to shoot a hole in the Batplane and the aircraft crashes, landing in front of a cathedral.
He doesn't just shoot one of his goons. He shoots Bob the Goon, which is very important because Bob the Goon had his own action figure and was the only figure that actually looked like almost identical to the character in the movie.
Oh.
And the actor who plays Bob the Goon plays Cookie, the chef, in City Slickers, also a film with Jack Palance. I don't know if you guys are considering. I feel you do Arliss, Barbie, and then newcomer City Slickers, because that's another franchise.
I've never seen it. No. This is really, we've got a lot ahead of us.
Truly.
Anything can happen from this point forward. We've only seen two movies. So as Vicky makes her way toward the wreckage, the Joker intercepts her, taking her at gunpoint to the top of the cathedral tower. Batman, wounded but still alive, follows the Joker and Vicky up to the top of the cathedral. When Vicky spots Batman approaching, she seduces the Joker long enough to distract him. Now, we think she's about to give him a blowjob?
This is wild. She's like, I like purple.
That was shocking this time, for sure.
It's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
In this rewatch, the two things that stood out to me was like, oh, I never really clocked that was Robert Wool's joke about King of the Wicker People. I don't think landed for me before. It's just because the costume looks like it's made out of wicker. And I was like, what is wicker? Oh, he means like the furniture stuff. I didn't really connect that before. And then, yeah, her sliding down and Jack's and Joker's face was like, oh, whoa. Yeah, he this went over 7-year-old Darren's head for sure.
Yeah.
And kind of didn't clock it. I've seen it a bunch of times since, but that was, that would not fly these days, in a family-targeted audience film.
Because also at this point, we don't really see what her plan is.
No.
Yeah.
And so you kind of think it's like, she's got a plan, but it's like,
she's anything to survive. Yeah.
Any old thing.
Which honestly, this would be pretty
gross
to complete.
I don't think I would like it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Wait, doesn't the Joker disfigure his girlfriend at some
point? Yeah, that happens in the he shows her in the restaurant.
Oh yes,
in the,
yes, yes.
In the museum, or the museum.
That was scary.
It was.
Yeah.
So Batman greets the Joker with the same line, "Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?" and throws his first punch. The two fight. The brawl ends with the Joker ducking out of the way, sending Batman and Vicky tumbling over a ledge.
That worried me, but a helicopter arrives as a getaway for the Joker. He grabs on and starts to escape. Just then, Batman fires a cable at the Joker's leg, wrapping the other end around a gargoyle. The statue breaks off and pulls the Joker down, making him lose his grip and fall to his death.
That was good.
Yeah.
As Batman and Vicky try to pull themselves back up, the ledge breaks away and they start to fall. Batman quickly fires a cable hook up toward the tower while grabbing Vicky with the other arm. The hook catches and the two are suspended midair, safe.
At a press conference, Harvey Dent reads a letter from Batman saying that Gotham has earned its rest from a wave of crime. But if evil should ever arise again, they should call him. Then Knox asks how Commissioner Gordon answers that they'll use a bat signal and shines a spotlight with a bat signal into the sky. Vicky leaves Knox behind to continue her investigation instead of getting into a limo with Alfred and sets off for Bruce Manor.
And as they drive off, we can see Batman standing on top of a building.
It's Wayne Manor. I'm just reading what the good people of Batman Wiki
Bruce
have
Manor,
written.
Bruce Manor, I think, is a patter writer for the Oscars.
Bruce Manor. As they drive off, we can see Batman standing on top of a building in front of the bat signal in the night sky. And that's our movie.
That's it.
And thus,
film ends.
It is perfect. There was that moment that we didn't talk about when he's about to like carry Vicky out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
How much do you weigh?
108. Yes. And then he goes like,
a little more than 108.
Yes.
I was like,
brutal.
Why are you asking? Why are you saying it's wrong?
Body
I just
shape.
Was like,
why is the weight so low?
Yeah, yes. I mean, it can't be true. And then also you can look at her and know if you can lift her. Okay.
Yes,
like it's just like what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not doing physics for every like grappling hook he's shooting up into the Art Deco architecture.
He's like 108 plus 1,000 plus 2,000. Yeah, so just fly, Batman.
Just fly. Just lift her up.
Case Batman could never solve was his love interest's body mass index.
He's obsessed.
But does he just not save fatties? Like, what if I was like, Batman, help? He was like, sorry, fatty, you're on your own.
My cord can only hold 108. Okay.
All right. Well, I guess I'll just be here and get robbed.
It's pretty fucked up.
Batman's the worst.
Okay.
I've changed my mind.
Thank you, Taryn.
Yeah.
So Batman grossed $40.49 million during its opening weekend and became the fastest film to earn $100 million, reaching it in 11 days. 10 days plus late night previews. Despite the film's box office over $400 million against a budget of no more than $48 million, Warner Brothers claimed it ended up losing $35.8 million and not likely to ever show a profit, which has been attributed to a case of Hollywood accounting. What
does that mean?
Yeah.
They're just
this is
lying.
Why we strike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is why we're on strike, because they lied about Batman.
It's bullshit.
Fuzzy math.
Wild.
We made $400 million, but we lost $35 million, so we're in debt. What?
Yeah. Also, the merchandising on this must have been just absolutely insane. I mean, I have action figures, clothing, McDonald's toys, cups, Burger King cups with, like, I mean, it was everywhere.
Everything. And then you're also saying the thing about Jack Nicholson making so much money off of it.
Yeah.
So it's just like long term, we know that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wild.
It currently holds a 76% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. At the time of the film's release, audiences hated Michael Keaton's casting as Batman. The movie was fresh off the heels of the release of Beetlejuice, so some saw him more as the Joker. The backlash was so severe that Warner Brothers received over 50,000 letters complaining about the cast. So, is that just tweets now?
That's tweets now, because I don't, like, who's writing a letter?
Yeah.
Sealing it up, getting some stamps.
And who's opening it? Like, I feel like they don't care if someone sent like a negative letter.
Maybe the accountant who was supposed to track that $38 million was busy reading all the hate mail.
Yeah.
He's losing money. No more money.
Ugh, that's so dumb. 50,000 letters complaining about
Michael
Keaton.
That's pretty fucking
funny. Seems like a lot.
Yeah. He does. There's a clip of Keaton. He wins like the People's Choice Award or whatever, like for best actor. And he says in his acceptance speech, like, keep writing those letters.
Aww.
Like kind of an F you.
He has a good sense of humor.
I love a sassy man with a Jerry curl.
He hosted SNL when I was on the show. And it was the week of my birthday, too.
Wow.
And me and Bobby Moynihan got to write the monologue. We wrote a sketch and they're like, this is good. We'll make it the monologue. And so Bobby and I got to dress up. I had the best department heads in the world dress me up as Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Wow.
And then Bobby was Danny DeVito's Penguin.
We're looking at a picture.
See for the next one.
It was
an exceptional week. It was a very fun week. We also Bobby dressed up as Otho, and I dressed up as Catherine O'Hara from Beetlejuice, and we did like a little scene from that too. It was one of the most fun weeks just because it was that, like, I was a child and you were a hero and now you're here and, like, dreams do come true. And
that's
then
amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible.
A couple of months ago, I was out to dinner for my wife's birthday and Michael Keaton walks into the restaurant
is he looking good?
Did he look? He looks, oh God, he looks so good. He's so good.
Okay.
God, it's salt and pepper. Never tasted so delicious. And he's like kind of putting eyes over the table. And I got so in my head. I was like, this is my, like, one of my childhood heroes. And he's here. And I worked with him. I could say hi, right?
Yeah.
My poor wife, who's at her birthday dinner, is like, Darren, let's finish the meal. As you're walking out, if he makes eye contact, go over and say hi. And I was like, yeah, that's the plan. You're the best wife. That's so smart.
Yeah.
And we walk out and I kind of like, I'm kind of side eyeing his table all the time. And he looks up. And so I make a beeline and I go, hey, Michael, hey, it's Taryn. We did SNL together. He's like, oh, yeah. How are you, man? And I was like, I said, come in. And then he's like, yeah. We love this place. You live in the area? I said, oh, yeah. We're just kind of down the street. We're a couple blocks away. He's like, yeah. We're close by too. We're here all the time. And I was like, yeah, we love it. It's our neighborhood restaurant. He's like, okay, great. Well, hey, if you see me here again in the future, feel free to just leave me alone.
I'm
it
literally
was
going
best.
To slide off the couch.
That was my immediate feeling. I was like, I have to leave. I got to get out of here.
I'm like obsessed, but also dead inside.
Feel free to leave me alone.
Leave me alone. And we all laughed. And I said, that was my instinct.
Really
that was my instinct. Have a great day.
It's
enjoy
very
dessert.
Funny.
And it was so funny. It was
That's
the
so
perfect.
Funny. Well, because also like you might then start to run into him a lot.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, it's a funny joke, but it's also
100%.
Like,
he's like, you'll see me again here.
Yes.
If you come here a lot. Let's
inverse,
not do this again.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's cool.
Another great bit, inversely, was Jeff Goldblum, who I like just was at a premiere and I introduced myself. I was like, such a huge fan. I love him. He's like, yes. Good. Hey, well, please keep in touch. I said, like, I don't want to disturb you anymore. I just want to say thank you for your work. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, oh, my God.
Let's keep in touch.
He's really nice. I met him once, and I was in Jurassic World, and I didn't say that to him because I just was like, you might not have seen it. I don't care. I don't know. And then, but he was so warm and like gave me a big hug and like took a picture and was like hugging me in the picture. And I was like, this is a great picture. That's nice.
He really loves people. I was in New York. He was in The Pillow Man, I think, on Broadway at the time. And I was in Times Square, or not like by the theater district. And I like rounded a corner and he was rounding a corner and we like almost bumped into each other and I just screamed, hug me like you love me. And he went, okay. And he did. And then we just went about our day.
I love that story.
It was wild.
So
he's great.
That's a great thing to say. Great.
He's never been in a Batman movie. He should be in a Batman movie.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That would be fun.
He'd be a great villain.
He would be a great villain.
Yes.
He could do a maniacal laugh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Well, let's. Let's get into our trivia segment. No Wayne. So this, you did touch on this. So Robin Williams was offered the role of Joker when Jack Nicholson hesitated. He'd even accepted the role when producers approached Nicholson again and told him Williams would take the part if he did not. Nicholson took the role and Williams was released. Now that is so fucked up. Mm-hmm. Williams resented being used as bait and not only refused to play Riddler in Batman Forever, but also refused to be involved in any Warner Brothers productions until the studio apologized.
And that is star power.
That's amazing. I mean, to have the role, to have it and have it taken away.
Yeah, that sucks. That actually really.
And he would have been amazing.
He would have been so good.
That's so crazy.
Boy, oh boy.
What a mean business.
Very mean. Michael Keaton was worried that Batman's secret identity would in reality, what? Oh, be in reality would be fairly easy to uncover.
Would Robert Wool?
Robert Wool
at Bruce Manor? And discussed ideas with Tim Burton to better disguise the character, including using contact lenses. In the end, Keaton decided to perform Batman's voice at a lower register than Bruce Wayne's, a technique which has since become a key part of future portrayals of Batman in film, television, and video games.
Wow. Yes. Context is, it's kind of a good idea, though, because it's like enough to throw you off.
But like, who's stopping to put, I guess he does have to put the whole outfit on. So like, what's a couple other seconds? Bloop,
bloop, bloop. But then sometimes they get messed up and you have to like do it again. Yeah. It's like, he's really wasting time. Yeah. Tim Burton makes a cameo as one of the Joker's goons in the museum scene. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. I don't know Mr. Burton at all.
Honestly, I've seen him, but I don't know that I would really recognize his face. Can we pull up a picture?
Yeah. What does Mr. Burton look like? And why am I calling him
Mr.
Burton?
He's got sunglasses on. He's got, I think he's wearing like a hat, like a beret or something. Like it's like a beret backwards. Because he went to Cal Arts. He was an artist first. He was an animator for Disney. And he worked on The Black Cauldron and Oliver and Company. Like, he was a visual artist, like literally drawing the cells, and then wanted to be a filmmaker and did a couple of shorts. And then Paul Rubens, I forget how they met through the Groundlings, I think, but and then got him to direct Pee-wee. And
that's crazy.
The rest is history.
Interesting. It makes his movies now make sense to me that he started in animation.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he's bringing animation to life.
He has a very visual aesthetic.
Yeah. At the time of its release, comic book fans reacted negatively to the Joker murdering Bruce's parents. In the comics, Joe Chill is responsible. Mm-hmm. Who's Joe fucking Chill?
Is it Joe Cool's brother?
Who's Joe Cool?
When Snoopy's cool. If it was another Snoopy, I'd be really happy.
But who is Joe Chill?
I don't know.
Taryn, do you know?
Joe Chill, he appears in later films. You will experience a Joe Chill in Batman Begins, a cinematic Joe Chill.
Okay.
But they did not like them crossing over. And because I saw this when I was so young, I always thought it was like canon that Joker was the one. But having now gone back.
Interesting.
Joe Chill, like Thomas Wayne, Bruce's dad, is this big billionaire magnate sort of thing and a doctor as well. And Joe Chill mugs them, was like down on his luck because Gotham is sort of like Chicago. There's New York elements too, but it's always been more Chicago. Metropolis has always been a little more New York.
Didn't know.
And they left a movie singing The Mask of Zorro, Bruce and his parents, and Joe Chill mugs them and then panics and kills both of his parents in front of him.
Oh. Damn. Well, yeah. Well, writer Sam Hamm, which he can...
The segue of trauma of parent murder into saying Sam Hamm.
Well, Sam Hamm.
Well, Sam Hamm said it was Burton's idea to have the Joker murder Wayne's parents. He said the writer's strike was going on, and Tim had the other writers do that. I would also hold innocent to Alfred letting Vicki Vale into the Batcave. Fans were ticked off with that, and I agree. That would have been Alfred's last day of employment at Wayne Manor.
Yeah.
But so the other writers were on strike? Or like he was on strike, but other writers still wrote. I'm like, what
Someone
is this?
Scabbed.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had to dance.
They had to dance.
They had to dance. They had to dance.
They just had to. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Batman after this.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. My social battery right now, where would I put it? Ooh, I mean, I'm kind of looking to connect with friends. I'm also looking to retreat a little bit and be by myself. It's hard to know exactly what you need at any given time. And it can be so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up so much. After the winter, the spring is here. Well, what's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I started therapy when I was about 30, and it was so, so helpful for me for learning about myself, learning about boundaries, learning about my relationships with other people, and how to deal with other people. There's so many things you can benefit from therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/newcomers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/newcomers.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
We're back. Holy Batman, Batman. In this new segment, we'll rate Michael Keaton on the definitive newcomer's Batman scale. We'll use our phones to rank this Batman across 5 unique characteristics. Preparedness. How prepared is this Batman? Does he get to use his little gadgets and tools? Detective ability. Does this Batman get to be a little detective? Is he good at mystery solving? Voice graveliness. How gravelly is this Batman's voice? Sadness. How lonely, brooding, emo is this Batman? And finally, hotness, horniness. How hot and how horny is this Batman?
I love it.
Can I borrow your QR code? Because
yeah.
Mine is far away. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I'm working on my hotness horniness scale.
Yeah, that one takes a minute.
Mm-hmm. Think. Really think just through. Trying to tap back into that feeling of 7-year-old.
Oh, everything okay. Jumped.
All right.
I love it. Okay, great. So let's see how we rated this Batman. We gave this Batman an 85.7% preparedness. I mean, yeah, I feel like he was pretty prepared. Yeah. But it wasn't, I almost feel like the previous one from the 60s, he had like every single thing ever. Yeah.
He had so it's kind of repellent.
Right?
Yeah. So it's kind of changing how I see him in terms of his preparedness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Detective ability, he got an 81%. I felt like when he didn't immediately piece together that Joker killed his parents, I thought, you're not a great detective.
But there was like some good chemistry detecting, right? Where he's like buying all the products and he's sampling
them. That was
them
amazing.
And them down, you know?
And then swerving, swooping up the balloons.
He's balloon swooping like a true really detective would.
My balloons!
He was really
he stole my balloons.
Voice graveling is 71.3%. Yeah, I mean, it was gravelly, but it wasn't, it's almost like not even the parody we have now of it being gravelly.
Yes.
So I'm seeing it as less gravelly.
Yeah.
I went pretty low on this because I would say it was husky, more of a husk, like a whispered husk more than a gravel, where like Christian Bale, as you will see, like goes full on like, this is more.
With Christian Bale soon.
Christian Bale coming up. You got hot Kilmer. Val Kilmer like looks hot, but is like watching paint dry a little bit. You got Batman Returns, which is more, but a very different movie. It's like it's a very, very different movie. And then you've got Kilmer, and then George Clooney, who's you know he got a good paycheck. But then then Christian Bale does a very, very good job. But Keaton is still my number one. He's my number one. Always so will far, be. He's the best. Same. Other than Kevin Conroy, are you doing animated series?
Yes, we are. Yeah, okay. We are going to at least do one, I think.
Yes.
There's the movie, there's The Mask of the Phantasm, which is
we're doing
decent.
That.
What are your thoughts on it? Because I do love a cartoon.
Love Batman the Animated Series. Great. Wow. It was one of the first animated shows to do their art on black cells. So they added the color, right? Because normally it's like translucent or a white page.
Yeah.
But they would start on a black page and then add in color because the shadows and the sort of film noir version of it.
That's interesting.
It's pretty cool.
I've only seen like white and like, or the clear cells.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. And they use Danny Elfman's score for the theme song too, which is awesome.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. I don't know. I love a cartoon.
We're open-minded.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay.
All right, whatever you say. Sadness, 74.7. He seems pretty sad.
I thought he was, like, sad-ish. Mm. I guess it was sad when he was like, I haven't been in many rooms in my own home.
Yeah.
Just take a tour. Alfred could show you the rooms.
You should eat in a different room every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. His turtleneck moment in the alley, too. You know what I mean? Really got
with
bundled up and laying the roses down on the street. Yeah. Like, that's a... Okay. Yeah, that was sad. He was sad.
It's sad. Okay, hotness and horniness, 78.3%.
Who gave him that low one?
I'm thinking it's Taryn.
Taryn.
I went pretty low on the the horniness.
Yeah.
There's not, I think the only time you get like a real shirtless, like rip thing is him upside down doing the sit-ups like a bat in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Oh. If memory serves.
Yes.
Not a lot of skin.
No. I'm sort of just generally attracted to the character at this point. Mm. So I'm like, I'm going to go with, that's pretty hot.
Yeah.
He's I don't know, like maybe it was the age I first saw, but like there's like a dad energy to this Batman. It's like, like it's a little bit like I'm looking out, I'll take care of you here. We should open more bottles of champagne, like hosting a party kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, so low.
No, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
Your opinion.
But hotness, horniness, I don't know, like the suit, the black rubber suit, like, you know. Again, you're about to see one of the most, I think, like beautiful performances physically and emotionally in Batman Returns with Michelle Pfeiffer, who's phenomenal. And do yourself a favor before you see the movie or just after you see the movie, watch how she worked the whip. There's a scene in a department store. She uses a whip. That's the only spoiler part. But you can watch online the take. She did it in one take and she's actually doing all the whipping.
I actually have seen that clip out of context, and it is amazing.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mind-blowing.
So it'll be cool to see that in context and see like what is happening and why she's doing that.
Why would she ever?
Yeah.
A whip?
Well, it's time for our segment Five Kapows, where we read reviews from our own listeners because we value how you guys praise us.
Yes.
This is a 5-star review from Girly Grace. I know so much more about wigs. I love listening to you guys chat about stuff you're not into. In the words of Nicole, I tee-hee-hee the whole time. Also, I now know what makes a good wig. We haven't seen any wigs yet. Like, we've been in previous movies, we've been obsessed with bad wigs. Yes. Mm.
The all of Marvel, most of the
Thor, the, all the of women, Thor stuff.
Most of the women made the wig department angry. And they said, no good wigs for anybody, especially Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. Like, she really did someone dirty, and they hate her. It's
all
out of
vinyl for her.
But you're right. All of the wigs in Thor are terrible.
It's a little,
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get some bad wigs coming up, because that's always fun.
I do love a bad wig.
Yeah.
So, okay. In addition to Apple reviews, we're also reading reviews from Letterboxd. Also, we're going to give each film a one-sentence review ourselves and a star rating. And if you don't know what Letterboxd is, I'll tell you. It's a social platform where people can write reviews of films. You can follow the show on Letterboxd at Newcomers.
Are you on Letterboxd, Taryn?
Yeah.
I started a Letterboxd, and I think the reason I went on was because I saw Coco, and I needed people to know how much I loved Coco.
I love Coco. It's such a good movie. My daughter loves it, and I've now seen it like 10 times.
I love it, too, but I immediately thought of Coco Montrese from RuPaul's Drag Race, and I was like, you saw a drag queen and went on Letterboxd? And then I was like, you're out of your mind, Nicole. The movie Coco.
None of that adds up.
God.
No, I would have gone on for Simone. We were Team Simone hardcore.
Okay, so here's a Letterboxd review, and Taryn, we are going to ask for your one-sentence review of this film.
Okay.
3 stars from Adam Bolt, trying to work out the tactical advantage of making a suit with a neck that can't move. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. This is from Liam F. Imagine my disappointment to discover that Danny Elfman, who wrote the musical score for the movie, is actually 5'10 and not the size of an elf.
So that's your problem with the film?
Interesting.
Look, it can be anything, and that's what's fun about it.
And that was a 4-star review.
So what's a one-sentence review you would give this film, Nicole?
I think I'm going to give it 3 stars. This bat is not a man for me.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna give it 4 stars.
Okay.
I think, so my review is Tim Burton's fantastic. I love the characters. Joker's wild. I hate my review.
It's good. No, Lauren, that was good. Lauren, that was so good.
Okay, fine.
Taryn.
Keep it.
Okay. Finally, the dark and gritty Dark Knight we've wanted to see at the cinema without the expense of losing the fantastical fun. Asterisk, this movie taught me how to dream.
Aww.
5 stars.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I loved that review.
It's better than mine. And
it's much better than mine.
Wait, can I throw in Joker's Wild, though?
Yeah. Me too. Joker's Wild.
Okay, perfect. So everyone out there, please write a review of our show on Apple Podcasts, because we really need you to. And we'll be picking one to read on the next episode. And also rate us on Spotify. You could just go give us 5 stars.
Yeah, we want that. Taryn, do you have anything you want to plug?
Just click. Hey, just click, would you? I want to plug this podcast. I've been a fan of both of yours for so long. We've never gotten to do anything ever, but Nailed It is by far the most watched TV show in my we will repeat watch what we call Grandma Pirate Donut episode because nothing
that
makes
woman
us,
was so funny.
Nothing makes us laugh so hard. And Lauren, I've been a fan of yours for so long, and yours and Ben's early show, like, still one of the best things on the internet in my opinion. Honored
the
to be here.
The feeling is
thank
mutual.
You
thank you so much for being here. Yeah. We appreciate you so much, and we appreciate your loving perspective on this film, because it really helped us love it more.
It made me maybe want to watch it again.
That's maybe crazy, but okay. I mean, maybe you will
I don't
know.
Do
maybe
it. I'll just rewatch the everything music. And be like, I love
you guys,
it.
I will say, you guys never really, and I know that's also another point of the podcast, but you never tap into the music. And I would just give a gentle, if you do watch it again, Danny Elfman's score to this film. Truly iconic. Truly iconic.
I don't feel like I talk about music, but I like the music.
I do like
it. It gives
music.
It sort of like fantastical feeling.
So it was
if
Prince
you're looking
and
for
Danny
new
Elfman?
Segments moving forward, some little like what did the score? You know, I'm not that. This
I
is
like
not my
that.
Job.
Aaron. I like that. That's really yeah. good.
That is yeah. good.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah. Please welcome our Taryn Killam suggested segment. What did the score score?
Yes, you have to get
brought
credited
to you,
every time.
To you
every
by
time
score
we say
bars.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
And reach out to Hershey's and see if Score Bars will yeah. endorse that segment. It'll get you a little extra cash.
These are all really good ideas. So,
cash.
Like it.
Associate producer Taryn Killam.
I love it. You're going to get credits.
We'll be back next week with the sequel to this movie, Batman Returns.
I can't wait for Batman to return.
We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Newcomers is a production of HeadGum Studios. Our producer is Ali Khan. Our executive producer is Anya Kanivskaya. The show is edited, mixed, and mastered by Ferris Manchi, who also composed our theme song. Follow us on Letterboxd at Newcomers and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We might just read it on the next show. Na 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 na. Bye.
That was a HeadGum original.